Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. It's Sunday afternoon, 19 May, actually Sunday evening. I had some time on my hands, so I thought I'd knock out an episode. And this is episode 274. I won't keep you long. I won't keep you long today. The big news, of course, is what's going on with Iran. The president of Iran's helicopter crashed, and that's all the news. And I was kind of looking all over the internet, and probably the best coverage that I've seen was from CNN, believe it or not. So here's the latest update. So Raisi's helicopter, President Iran, of course, President Raisi. I've got one, two, three, all these updates coming from CNN. I'll start with the very latest one. The helicopter is carrying nine people when it crashed. Nine people on the helicopter that crashed in northwest Iran on Sunday today, including three officials, an imam, and flight and security team members, Iran's Tasnim News reported. The IRGC-run media outlet SEPA reported that the nine included Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, Foreign Minister Hosni Amir, and I can't say his name, we'll get to him in a little bit, the governor of eastern Azerbaijan province, and Tabriz's Friday prayer imam, Muhammad Ali, as well as a co-pilot, pilot, crew chief, and head of security, and another bodyguard. So nine people on the plane. Oh, I'm sorry, the helicopter that crashed. Let's see, what else? Next update was helicopter carrying Iranian President Raisi crashed, the state media says. We already know that. Helicopter carrying Iranian president crashed in a northern region of the country on Sunday, according to the state news agency IRNA. After hours of searching, officials say they have not reached the crash site, despite determining the exact location thanks to signals from the aircraft, so they know where it's at. The rescuers are contending with dense fog and extreme cold in the remote mountainous East Azerbaijan province. It is now early morning local time. This was from 7:58 Eastern time, about an hour ago, I guess. Let's see what else. The country's foreign minister was among the number of officials. We know that. And then there's a lot of, next update was Iran expresses appreciation to numerous nations for support. Iran's foreign minister, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, expressed appreciation to a number of nations and international organizations for their support during the search and rescue operation. Here's a statement. The Islamic Republic of Iran sincerely thanks the numerous governments, nations, and international organizations for their expressions of human emotion and solidarity with the government and people of Iran, as well as their offers of help and assistance for the search and rescue operation, the statement said. Among those leaders expressing support were those from Iraq, Pakistan, and India, Armenia, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the European Union. Turkey and Russia has said that they are sending aircraft to help with the search operations. And their regional leaders expressing sympathy and offer to support. The first, of course, is Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. He expressed concern and said he is praying for Raisi and his first comments since the crash, according to state news agency IRNA. Pakistan president had something to say. He wrote on X, "My heartfelt prayers and good wishes for the well-being and safety of the president." India Prime Minister Modi wrote on X, "We stand in solidarity with the Iranian people in their hour of distress and pray for the well-being of the president and his entourage." You get the idea. And who is the foreign minister, the top Iranian diplomat? His name is Hossein. Man, I can't say his name. Heavy hitter, obviously, with the president. Wonder what they're doing together. I mean, if they got three or four of these helicopters, I think I read. Why are they doing on the same one? That doesn't make any sense. Somebody needs to teach them about cross loading. Let's see, top Iranian diplomat who was accompanying the president during the helicopter crash. What did he do? He helped shift Iran's foreign policy from engagement with the West to improving relations with neighbors in the Middle East, especially Arab countries across the Gulf. He was 60 years old. He served in several positions in the Iranian foreign ministry since 97, including as an ambassador to Bahrain and deputy foreign minister for Arab and African affairs. Raisi nominated him to be foreign minister after his election in 2021. Obviously, Raisi. What else? He helped restore diplomatic ties with Saudi Arabia as part of a Chinese brokered agreement and visited the kingdom in 2023, which was a big deal. Since the outbreak of war in Gaza on 7 October, he has been traveling across the Middle East to talk with allies, including Hezbollah and Lebanon, and convey Iranian positions to countries in the region. He has a PhD in international relations from the University of Tehran. That's who he is. All right, before this episode's in, I'll check CNN one more time, see if there's any any update on whether they found the helicopter or not. In fact, I'll look right now. Let's see. Nope. The last post is 24 minutes ago when they said there was 9 people on the helicopter. Next, we'll go to Times of Israel. Saudi ties in reach but hinge on path to Palestinian state, Sullivan tells reluctant PM, of course, Netanyahu and Jake Sullivan, national security advisor. He's in Israel. Visiting national security, this is today, visiting national security advisor Jake Sullivan laid out to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday the opportunity currently available for Israel to normalize relations with Saudi Arabia if Jerusalem agrees to a pathway for a future Palestinian state. Sullivan arrived in Israel earlier in the day to hold, quote, constructive talks on the Biden administration's comprehensive vision for an integrated Middle East region with Crown Prince MBS, the White House said, Mohammed bin Salman. The kingdom, Saudi Arabia said, the two discussed a semi-final version of a wide-ranging security agreement between the countries. These agreements are considered a major part of Washington's efforts to bring Riyadh around to recognizing the state of Israel for the first time, but it's complicated by this little thing in Gaza. Safe. It's not a little thing. It's a it's a giant thing. That's not part of the article. That's just me. This effort appears to be a non-starter in Israel, with Prime Minister Netanyahu reiterating on Sunday that he would not accept a Palestinian state, even if it meant Saudi normalization deal. Riyadh and Washington have been clear that the movement toward a statehood is needed to reach an agreement. This did not stop Sullivan from again pitching the idea to Netanyahu as he briefed him on his meetings in Saudi Arabia and on, quote, the potential that may now be available for Israel as well as the Palestinian people. Saudi Arabia has long called for an independent Palestinian state to be created along 67 borders, which I'm not going to get into all that, but if you follow this closely, as you probably do, you know what those borders are, with East Jerusalem as a capital. However, it's untenable for Netanyahu's government hinges on support from hardliners who oppose a two-state solution. Jake Sullivan also met with President Herzog, National Security Council Anegbi, and Strategic Affairs Minister Ron Dermer, also discussing with them ongoing efforts to secure the release of the hostages in Gaza and, quote, the enduring defeat of Hamas, according to the White House. This next paragraph is very important because it's so true. Those two goals appear at odds, given that the United States is aiming to turn the hostage deal it is currently brokering into a permanent ceasefire that would likely leave Hamas in Gaza in some form. So the previous paragraph that says the enduring defeat of Hamas is not true because it would leave Hamas in Gaza in some form to get the hostages out, which we know. I mean, if we've been following this thing since 7 October, a lot of people in Israel, and of course the Prime Minister, that ain't happening. They're not letting Hamas stay in power at all. So I don't know why the United States keeps bringing this up, but they do. Israel's just going to go and continue in Rafah and take care of their own business, I think. Moving on, the U.S. officials told Times of Israel last week that the diplomatic initiative is advancing with international partners will marginalize the terror group. And that is the only alternative Israel has to permanently occupy Gaza without assistance from Arab allies and stabilizing the enclave. I don't know what Israel's going to do in Gaza, but they don't want Hamas in. That's much I know. Or the PLO, I don't think. Meanwhile, IDF troops are slowly expanding their limited operation in Rafah, a move Netanyahu insists the only way to pressure Hamas leader Sinwar to agree to a deal. He's probably right there. That's it. Not much on Rafah at all. I couldn't find anything. That's about the closest thing I could find, because we're definitely interested in what's going on there. Sorry about that water. Let's get back to what's going on this year. This is like the third story we've done. This is probably the follow-up, probably be the last story, maybe one more. This is from Defense News. I'm sorry, I can't remember who the author is. It's not my notes. U.S. departure from Niger already underway ahead of September deadline. So there you go. September, the United States has got to be out of Niger. The United States has begun withdrawing its forces from Niger. The two countries announced their decision in a joint statement on Sunday, today. After almost a week of military talks, the deadline is 15 September for the U.S. to be out. Niger has agreed to protect American forces while they withdraw and will help hasten some of the logistics. The United States, meanwhile, will remove all military personnel from the country. About 100 non-essential personnel have already left. With the United States will come stores of equipment to be largely spread around other sites belonging to U.S. Africa Command. America will move all sensitive and lethal kit, officials said, but will leave anything that is fixed, such as a barracks or a hangar, or that costs more than it's worth to move, basically. The departure is mainly taking place through the air rather than on the ground, making everything more expensive to transport. That's it. Real short article. 15 Sep, the United States is out. Next. Denmark. Now we're going to do 1, 2, 3. All the rest of the stories are Europe. One from Ukraine. They all involve Ukraine here and there. Denmark announces military aid for Ukraine. Rojef Manuel, 17 May. Denmark has allocated a budget for additional military assistance to Ukraine. The donation is valued at $813.5 million. Wow. Of which $348 million will be spent on air defense. That's like almost a third of it. The government wrote that part of the overall package will be utilized for artillery maintenance, additional military equipment, shells, I mean, probably 155, right? And anti-tank mines for Ukraine. Moreover, the latest contribution will fund the country's F-16 Fighting Falcon combat jet transfer to Kiev, which is expected to begin in 2025. Denmark also revealed some of the approved funding will finance NATO projects for Ukraine and other investments in the country's local military-focused business. Here is a quote from the Danish foreign minister, Rasmussen. As part of the package, the government is also setting aside funds to be invested directly into Ukraine's defense industry. Now, Denmark has spent a lot of money in Ukraine, and the author does a good job of going over some of that. Denmark's latest package for Ukraine follows a $13 million donation in January to boost the country's digital security against cyber attacks. And then in December of 23, Denmark partnered with Sweden to support Kiev defenses with CV-90 infantry fighting vehicles. Also in December of 23, Denmark and the Royal Air Force began training Ukrainian pilots for the future F-16 fleet. And then 8 months earlier, what's 8 months earlier than December? April, I'm guessing. Probably in April, Denmark and Netherlands signed an agreement to procure and supply Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine. Good story there. Should I continue with Ukraine? I'll get to it in a minute. Next story. Do you remember the story we did? Well, if you listened to the last episode, which was yesterday, funny enough, we talked about how France was, what's the word here? Oh, how about rankled? France was rankled with the way Germany is, in their opinion, and some people's opinion in France. Germany is kind of dominating the defense industry in Europe. Kind of made me think of that saying, don't hate the player, hate the game, or something like that. Germany's doing good. Anyway, this is a good story from Tim Martin about the European Defense Fund, how they're going to invest billions of euros into defense, 54 projects, in fact. These are all research and development projects, okay? Not procurement, all research and development. And then we go over what country's kind of managing it. And Germany and France are the two main ones. You know what I mean? They're the two main ones. Here we go. Laser weapons and future tanks, European Defense Fund to spend 1.3 billion U.S. or 1.03 billion euro on 54 projects. 54. Tim Martin, Breaking Defense, 2 days ago. European Defense Fund is set to invest 1.03 billion euro on a collection of 54 multinational research and developed military projects, including future main battle tanks, new airlifter capabilities, corvettes, not the car, counter unmanned aerial systems, and laser-based directed energy weapons. The new funding was announced Thursday by the European Commission. Selected projects will support technological excellence across a wide range of defense capabilities in critical areas, including cyber, ground, air, and naval combat, protection. How about all domains? There you go. Space-based assets, chemical, biological. So, you know, all domains. Let's see. It is also said that 54 proposals were picked out of a total of 236. So they had 236, and this European Commission racked and stacked them and said the top 54 or these. And the author does a good job of going kind of through the domains. And so we'll go through a little bit here. In the air domain, they're going to spend 20 million euro allocated over 18 months for this thing called the European System for Outsized Cargo Airlift Line of Effort. The project has been established to explore short and long-term options for new strategic airlift capabilities. German Airbus leads the project with other industry, including French engine maker Safran and Italian manufacturer Leonardo. So there you go. French and the Germans are involved in this with the Italians. Not that I'm keeping score, but I still got that last article in my head from yesterday. Let's see. Two flagship ground-based projects are Main Armor Tank of Europe, MARTE, MART. That's clever. And technologies for existing future main battle tanks will together involve more than 70 industrial players and resource organizations to work on design and systems for a new European main battle tank. The project is set to last 2 years. Remember, this is all R&D, research and development. It is based on maximum EU funding valued at almost 20 million euros. What was the last one? 20 million euros for the air domain, 20 million euros for the ground domain. What else? How about air missile defense? The air missile defense, the European Counter UAS project, will look to examine and develop a series of technologies to defeat drones, mainly focusing on passive and active sensors along soft and hard kill effectors. While they're spending some money on this, $43 million will support industry activities led by Leonardo for a 42-month period. Leonardo, of course, I think that's Italy. Out at sea, the second phase of the European Patrol Corvette program, also called the European Patrol Corvette 2, will deliver in 4 years two prototype ships in line with a pair of designs already selected. A full combat multipurpose and long-range multipurpose prototype will be constructed. How much do they have for this? EU funding for the project is 155 million euro. It's led by Navaris, a joint venture between French Naval Group and Italian shipbuilder Fincantieri. So the French are quite involved in all of it, and the Italians. Here's some laser stuff. Development of more novel weapon systems include the second phase launch of the Tactical Advanced Laser Optical Systems Talos project, designed to support long-term target of 100 kilowatt laser weapons by 2030. Everybody seems to be having problems with these lasers, especially on the move, right? We discovered that a couple episodes ago. Maybe the fix is doing better. The on the move is probably tough. Managed by France's CILS has a total of 25 million for the project for 3 years. So France is involved in that. Final paragraph. The results of the call proposal comes months after the EC launched its first defense industrial strategy, promising to make Europe's industrial base more competitive, tap its full potential, and deliver a level of manufacturing readiness capable of withstanding Russian aggression. Notice one thing was missing from that, and that was artillery. Notice that was missing from that? Anyway, and long-range missiles, too. Next. Speaking of long-range missiles, that was not on purpose. MBDA launches European hypersonic missile interceptor concept phase. We just did a story about this between the Japanese and the Americans. Interbish, 17 May. Defense news. MBDA signed an agreement for the European Hypersonic Defense Interceptor Study project concept phase with the Organization for Joint Armament Cooperation. This agreement was signed on behalf of project partners and funding nations of France, Germany, Italy, and the Netherlands, all working together. A total of 19 partners with more than 20 subcontractors in 14 countries are part of the project. MBDA is a coordinator. The project seeks to develop an Indo-atmospheric hypersonic and ballistic missile interceptor by 2035. Very short article. The three-year concept phase intends to pick the most suitable and effective counter-hypersonic and anti-ballistic concept of interceptor for European nations' needs, along with associated weapon architecture. It includes defining operational scenarios and weapon systems interface and building a joint definition of each threat based upon knowledge and expertise of all partners involved. Real short article. So Europeans want a interceptor. Now, I can see how you'd want to cooperate on something like that as Europe, right? And I can see how you'd want to cooperate on something simple. I say simple. Like an anti-tank weapon, right? In-law is probably one of the best in the world. Just everybody buy the in-law. You know what I mean? Why do the Germans need one? Why does everybody need their own anti-tank weapon? Just buy the in-law. It's probably the best. Now, you get into things kind of the middle ground, like a rifle, an assault rifle. Maybe even assault rifle is kind of like an anti-tank. Maybe everybody can agree on assault rifle. Same ammunition, same sight, same power, same everything. But you get into some things like trucks, fighters, even artillery, especially armor and infantry fighting vehicles. Now, I could see that would be tough to do to me. To me, that's what I think. But certain things you could probably work together with, like this hypersonic interceptor and something simple like a pistol, right? Or an anti-tank weapon. That's probably where they should spend their time, on what's more common than what's not common. All right, that's not part of any article. That's just me rambling. Here we go. Rheinmetall. How many articles left? One, two left, and we'll be done. Rheinmetall to open new air defense facility in Ukraine. You see where I'm going with all this, right? The article yesterday talked about Germany was expanding in Eastern Europe and the French were kind of rankled by it. So here we go. Rheinmetall, of course, German, to open new air defense facility in Ukraine, Gestor Domingo, 17 May. Defense news. Rheinmetall is planning to establish a new venture with Ukraine in the field of air defense. The CEO of Rheinmetall announced the update during the company's annual general meeting. Added that the site will likely begin production in 1 or 2 years. The site will also serve as a repair base for the IRIS-T SL, Skynex 30, and Gepard systems transferred from Germany. Rheinmetall has established various production programs in Ukraine to aid the country in countering Russia's advances. The company signed a deal with an undisclosed local arms group to build artillery munitions in February. I'm sure we talked about that. The majority of 51% of the venture will be managed by Rheinmetall, with the remaining 49% held by the Ukrainian entity. A 200 million euro armored vehicle plant was also opened in 2023 in the country's western region. The factory is reported to be capable of producing 400 tanks annually, which is quite a lot. Additionally, Rheinmetall has announced plans to build a factory and maintenance hub in Lithuania and Romania, and focused on bolstering Kiev's armed forces. Last story. Again with Germany and Slovakia. working for Ukraine or working to help Ukraine. Germany and Slovakia work to extend repair hub for Ukraine beyond 2024. Not a long article, but very good article. 17 May, Elizabeth Gosselin Malo, Defense News. Negotiations are underway between the German and Slovak governments to extend the lease of KNDS repair hub in Slovakia for German and French-made combat vehicles damaged in Ukraine, according to the manufacturer. In 2022, the Franco-Franco German joint venture KNDS, formed by defense companies Krauss, Maffei, Wegmann, and Nexter, established a Slovakia base to perform rapid maintenance on vehicles donated to Ukraine. While the initial lease was expected to expire at the end of this year, as it was always intended to be a temporary infrastructure, government officials and industry executives are now working to prolong activities at the site. Since become operational in December of 2022, the hub has served as a strategic location for patching up Ukraine's KMW and Nexter provided vehicles, which make their way to Slovakia by trucks. Some of these things include the self-propelled howitzer PZH-2000, Caesar-wheeled howitzers, Dingo armored transport vehicles, and more. According to the company's release, six vehicles can be served simultaneously in the 800-square-meter area. The future of the repair base has been uncertain over the last few months. A vehicle maintenance facility also exists in Lithuania, where damaged Leopard 2 A6 and A5 tanks used in Ukraine are repaired by the Lithuanian Defense Services, a joint venture set up 2 years ago by Rheinmetall and KMW. Under the current contract, maintenance operations at this site are expected to continue until the end of this year. That's it. Ton of Europe stuff, defense industry stuff, and that's it. Let me see what our time is. 27 minutes, a little bit longer than I wanted to go. Let me check one more time, see if there's anything with CNN on this helicopter. Nope, 44 minutes ago, that's the last thing. I was kind of surprised how well CNN is covering this. Anyway, that's what I've been going to. All right, what are we on? What episode are we on? 274. So that's it. Episode 274 in the books. Thank you very much for listening and good night.